I have Chris Harn on this podcast today. He was one of the guys that orchestrated one of the biggest horse racing scandals in our time. Chris, how you doing today, buddy?
Good, Steve. Thank you very much.
All right. I know it's a little tough to talk about. I know you've never talked about this ever before, and I appreciate you coming on to give us a world exclusive here. And the first question I want to start with is, where'd you grow up, Chris?
Before we get on to where we grew up, I just wanted to, you know, give you some accolades as someone that, well, I was reading your story some, you know, and it looked like you went through prison and did time and whatnot, and it was pretty admirable to you elevate yourself to where you are now, because I mean, I've been there right with you, and being the next con and starting out with nothing hurts. It's pretty damn hard.
Yeah, it's not easy. I mean,
now, that was part of the reason why I was actually interested. After I spoke to you yesterday, you know, when you called me up to introduce this idea, I was thinking, what the hell am I getting into? But at the same time, later, it occurred to me, you know, why not? Here's a chance for me to help someone out, you know? And so it just felt like the right thing to do.
Well, I appreciate it.
Anyway, when I grew up as a kid, I was born in Pasadena, California, and I lived right above the Rose Bowl, and I don't know what that house would be worth today. I would assume about a $4-5 million home on the cliff that is above the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California, on Linda Vista Avenue. I'm actually like fourth or fifth generation California, which, it's a big deal if you're actually like, because a lot of people in California weren't there for that long. So it turns out, yeah, I was actually raised, I was born with the proverbial silver spoon. my father came out to, my father, who did not share this family history, if you will, he went out to Kentucky in the 80s, chasing the Portland. And my mother followed him. And then they got divorced. And then I basically spent 4 years in Lexington, Kentucky. This was between the ages of 8 and 12. After that, my mother basically dragged me to Annapolis, Maryland for no reason at all other than it was a nice place to live. And it was a nice place to live. I spent my high school years in Annapolis, Maryland. You know, I got to sail on the bay. I had a little Zodiac to go around and chase the boat. After that, I had to pick a college. Why'd I go to Drexel? Drexel actually kind of, in a sense, picked me. They sent me, what you would call spam. Or they sent me an advertisement, a flyer. They were looking for kids to go to school there. So that's kind of how I ended up at Drexel. It's a good engineering school. In many ways, it was a good decision. I was blessed with my mother paying for most of my tuition. And then that's how I ended up in Drexel. Shortly after that, of course, after Drexel, about 6 years, maybe 6.5 years of a 5-year program, I went to work for Autotope. Actually, I got the job through Alicia. A buddy of mine was their headhunter, and he positioned me very nicely, and that's how I got the job there to begin with. Although I was a good fit, I was a go-getter, and I did do actually pretty well for Autotope. Of course, I'm at the end, and I regret it, and carry guilt for it.
When you were at Drexel, what did you study exactly, and did you always know that's the field you wanted to go into?
I've been hot to the computer since I was like 12 years old, which in 1985 was hot, you know, it was a big deal, you know. Back then you had the Radio Shack.
Did you have a Commodore 64?
I'm sorry?
Did you have one of those Commodore 64 computers?
I had what is colloquially known as a Trash 80. It's a Radio Shack Trash 80. I did have a Trash 80. I did not have any hard drives with just that tape backup. And then every time you turn the thing off, you lost whatever program you wrote. Basically, that's actually the first environment I ever learned to program in was on a Trash 80 and in BASIC. A guy who was like a physics teacher at UK taught me basically the basic syntax and taught me a loop. And IBM PC Junior, which again didn't have a hard drive, but it did have floppy disks, so at least you had storage when,
All right. Now, from the time you went to Autotote, how long did it take before you, got together with Davis and De Silva, and how long were you there before you even thought about doing anything like you did over there?
Well, as far as thinking about it, I think I identified the UnCash tickets as being the most critical way to leech money out of the system after about 3 months of work. And it wasn't really that I was there looking to do it. When the idea first came up, it was really kind of brought up at a meeting as a mental health exercise. One guy was talking about how he was installing it. But actually, we were starting on the Peru project, the infamous Peru project, where I ultimately met my wife and everything else. But we were in a meeting, and one of the programmers he was going off on a story about how he was to rid the commission to work differently, and this was for like a foreign country, and supposedly like the mutuals guys did. Now that that commission needed to be higher, and so they had to bury some, extra skin into the price calculation.
Right, right. Now after you...
Supposedly they were going to include you in there. This is like 20 years ago, so I don't think anybody's going to get on the
list.
I don't know who's involved or what country it was for.
Right, but so...
Anyway, so we were... That got us off on the topic of, how could you steal money out of the system?
Well, let me ask you this question. Let me ask you this question, Chris. After you discovered the security glitch, did you get a rush when you found out about all the unclaimed tickets totaling like hundreds of thousands of dollars? And did you know at that point what direction you were going to go in, head into, or were you a little cautious? Or what were you feeling at that point in time?
No, I identified the unclaimed tickets as being, an issue after being with the company for 3 months. It wasn't after until like 4 years that I started, to just I don't know if I'm allowed to throw an F bomb or not, but
that's all right. Go ahead.
But yeah, it was a what the F moment. It wasn't until after the Twin Towers fell. And it wasn't until after, some of the writing started to appear on the wall that it made me think, I want to get out of the system. I don't want to program for this outfit no more. I don't want to live in my little ball home in the middle of suburbia. I had a beautiful little daughter, I wanted her to have the same education I had, which meant I wanted her to go to private school like I did. And I knew that, one or two of my college boys was hurting. David both of them and I were tight, obviously, or else we never would have gotten them involved in such a thing.
Right. Do you remember the first time you met them? Where'd you meet Davis and De Silva? In school?
Yeah. De Silva was my roommate freshman year. De Silva was my boy. We were, together for like 6 years. As different as can be, too. De Silva's Portuguese, and he's from Trenton, New Jersey. But he's like introducing me to, Philadelphia, because I'm basically thick from Kentucky and Maryland.
Right. Were you making good money at Autotote? Were they paying you fine up there, or you just wanted to go for the gusto?
Started me out at, around 30 grand, which is not bad. Hot chip programmer, maybe that's a little light. But by the time I left there, I was up to about 80. However, and that was out after 5 years, and that was right at the test of too. So programmers were hard to come by. We were jumping back and forth. Back then, from a third employer, I had a job offer from a company out in Vegas. I actually took a job out in California for a month and then came back. California is just way too expensive.
Right.
I can live in California, get paid the same amount to live in Delaware. It's a no-brainer, you know. I'll live in Delaware and have a nice house.
Right.
Otherwise, I'd have like a 2 or 3 hour commute to California.
All right, so now let me try and get this image in my head. From the time you got the auto tote till the time you guys did that first run with that first ticket, how long did that time take? How long did it take? How long were you there for?
I'd actually have to sit down and, you know, really calculate it, but I would estimate 4 or 5 years.
4 or 5 years?
Yeah.
Okay, now.
I mean, I started at auto tote in 1997, something like February of 1997. And of course, if we're talking October of 2002, the Breeders' Cup.
Right. Now, did you guys do any tickets before the Breeders' Cup? Did you guys do like some practice runs?
Yeah. There was three of these tickets that were done. There was the, I think it's a harness track somewhere. And then there was Aqueduct at Naira. Both Balmora and Aqueduct were done basically for lack of a better term using the silver identity.
Right. How'd you guys feel after the
first? The Breeders' Cup, which used David's identity.
Right. How'd you feel after the first one hit and the silver? Did the silver cash the first ticket?
But these were account wagering bets, so I mean they automatically resolve. It's not like, you know, you instigate something to cash this, you know. We use account wagering to place the wager that way. In hindsight, I wish I didn't, of course. In hindsight, I would have wished I'd done a lot of things differently. But what was nice about account wagering was you didn't have to attempt to counterfeit a ticket, which technically I probably could have just counterfeited the ticket. It would have been a lot wiser because then I would have had the option of just dropping it on the floor.
Right.
But because these were account wagers, once that ball was in action, there was no turning it back. The wheel was spinning.
Right. Let me ask you another question. What's the first thing you guys did with that money after that first ticket got cashed?
Keep in mind, we had been running another scam, which was the uncashed ticket, so we were running that successfully for about a year, you know. So we're already cashing envelopes at that point. You know, I'm smirking deposits into my bank account. it was pretty much everything 50-50. It was 50-50 between Priscilla and I, 50-50 between Davis and I.
Right.
So he, at that point, you know, the silver, I guess, owed me some money in a sense. And the big plot was to have him pay off the note on my car, which was around like $10,000 or $13,000, and to a Nissan. And then the rest of it, because it was about $50, $50,000 he needed to move over to me. And then the other part of it was going to be he was going to pay off my second mortgage.
Right.
And all of that is what triggered the money laundering enhancement on our case.
So you got started with the unclaimed tickets, and they were smaller amounts. What were the totals on those unclaimed tickets? Like, was it on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, or?
Well, basically, I was just kind of with those. I would just print up a batch of them and FedEx these tickets up to the lawyer, pass them to him, and he would go cash them and send me back money in various forms.
Right. Did you?
What was the question? I'm sorry.
No. I was going to say. Why don't you guys go for, like, easier wins for, like, smaller amounts when you start hitting, it's like, exactly and stuff like that, et cetera?
I hate to give any credit to Giuliani, but he used the term as the pig factor. And it's what gets, basically, people caught is they get bigger and bigger and bigger, and then, you know, eventually they just kind of, like, a pit. They get caught.
Right.
Pig factor.
Right.
I'm not really a fan of Giuliani, but he was dead nuts on there, and my mother's boyfriend wrote me hard about that when he's actually out of Philadelphia, but he was Irish, Jackson, but he knew the game a little himself, you know, the game of life, if you will.
Right.
And, you know, he's laughing at me. Of course, he didn't know what was going on, but he's laughing at me after he finds out I get caught.
I got you. Now,
but I don't need to talk about him too much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, were you guys in a rush to make a big hit like the pick six? Wouldn't it have been easier if you just made smaller ones?
I was afraid, you know, I didn't want this thing hanging over me. You know, I mean, I should have gone for the long con, as long, you know, subtle con I get to sit instead of with the one big hit. But it just wears on you, you know, when you're perpetrating these things for like ongoing, and finally you're like, you know, I want to get out of this too, and so looking for a big score, and
so the more money you guys hit, the more money you guys won, the more stressful it got?
Well, no, I mean, it really wasn't, I don't know,
I mean, obviously you were the one who was, you know what I mean, putting it all together, so, I mean,
yeah, but honestly, I mean, at one point I was just like, you know, forget this. Because, I mean, I'm making 80 grand, you know, I got some nice cash built up now, too. Got all my credit card debt and whatnot from college paid off.
Right.
And I'm sitting pretty well, but unfortunately my boys are not quite, you know, sitting as well. Because they're not employed and all they're doing is perpetuating this.
I got you. Now, do you regret not having a more experienced horse player, like, on your team with you that knew about placing the bets correctly, or?
Well, if I had someone to, you know, smack me upside the head and say, don't, you know, make it a $2 wager and not a 12, that was a pretty dumbass move, in hindsight. You know, make the bet look like a real bet instead of a 1-2-3-4 all, is basically what it looked like.
Right.
You know, I'd probably, well, maybe, but it would have slide through the filter. But it was pretty obvious to the experts that this bet looked fraudulent. They really couldn't prove it in one sense, in that there was no data, because I had I changed all the data, I changed the wager, and I had basically socially engineered them to remove the audit trail. In other words, I talked them into popping a tape back in, so they got overwritten.
Okay.
This was at the computer center in Catskill, New York, where the computer was actually at that I was modifying.
Now, were you the only one there who had all that access to all their information, or was there anyone else in a similar position as you over there?
No. I mean, yeah, some of, I guess, the spokespeople for Autocrat was trying to claim about how I was like a super user and whatnot. I was a programmer, one of among, that time I would estimate somewhere between 10 and 15. We all pretty much had access. I was certainly familiar with the double tone betting system, and I knew all the operations people well, but I was not really any more special of a user than others. I did not have seniority. There were certainly a lot of other people there with more seniority than I did.
I got you. Now, when you guys hit that pick six, right, and that 43-1 long shot wins the race, were you guys hesitant to cash it? Did you guys think about it? I mean, what was going through your mind at that point?
Well, I mean, really, we had no choice. Again, it's account wagering. He had no choice. That was already placed. It was already tied to his identity. They could tell that the bet came in through the telephone account wagering system.
So he had to cash it regardless, whether he wanted to or not.
Even the IRS would have been, in a sense, automatically triggered. And in fact, in the case of the Silva aqueduct that Catskills kept the IRS withholding, and I have no idea where the money went.
Jeez.
That's about $28,000.
Wow. So what was the conversation with De Silva and you?
It's actually, De Silva and I are still on the hook for that money, in fact.
Wow, so you still got to pay it back, huh? Jeez.
Yeah, which is our restitution, which is why I can't get the prosecutor to write a letter to my governor here in Kentucky, which means I can't vote.
Wow. Wow, that sucks. Now, what was going through, you know, what kind of conversation were you having when the ticket had to be cashed, the Silva cashed it, and then what happened after that? Like, did the heat start coming right away, or, I mean, was, tell me exactly what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think my conversation with Davis was something along the lines that, well, I guess, you know, Monday morning we're going to have to call the OCB. And he did. It was Monday morning. I needed to go into work, and I'm in there, and I'm starting to hear rumbles about them looking at the bet over in Catskill. And I was talking with my manager, son, and he wasn't pointing the finger at me quite yet. And then later in the day, even or I think after probably about Tuesday or Wednesday, he was. I remember his comment was something along the lines of, he's like, I don't know if you did this or not, but if you did, I hope you made a lot of money, and my advice to you is to run.
Wow, really, really said that, Jesus. Was there any way to cover your tracks after all the, like, after it happened? Were you thinking about covering your tracks? Was it possible?
No, the ball was already in motion.
It was already.
The bet itself was placed in a bathroom on my cell phone because I was in the office, but the telephone PBX system wouldn't make the correct ETMF phone to measure the phone system. In other words, it wouldn't read the tone.
Right.
So I had to use my cell phone to actually place the bet, which means I'm in the bathroom pressing all these.
Oh, God.
$12, one, two, three, four, all big bets. but once that was placed, and then especially once I then got onto the computer system and, then found that record and changed the bit so that it looked like it had a different way. This would have been after the fourth break.
All right, so now you guys can't...
Once after all that was done, basically a computer came along and scanned the register, and it was pretty much set in stone.
All right, so now you guys... The Silver says he's the winner of the ticket. How much time had transpired from the time you guys won the Breeders' Cup, the ticket, and then the feds actually, would they go to the grand jury and indict you guys, or how did that come about?
I'm a little good on some of this. But so the feds were trying to get gray on the overall procedure. I don't know if he actually went through a grand jury or not. I confessed up pretty early. There's no question there. I mean, I was first to admit it. I had a wife and child, and sure, you're somewhat familiar with the federal system, but they have these things called enhancements. And so I was easily looking at like 10 years with all my enhancements, because of my role and because I've used my position of power and because the payoff is like over $3 million. And it just got worse and worse. I cooperated.
Right, right.
You gave what's called a 5K1 letter, which what that means is the judge, because the prosecutor basically says to the judge that, that I provided their assistance, which in a sense I did. They would have had a hard time proving it to a jury that I did what I did. But it would have taken 5-6 years, and then I would have had to serve all the damn jail time. And by that time, my daughter would have been already in college.
Right, right, right. Now, what lawyer did you use for the case? Did you use a Philly lawyer, or did you use a...
My lawyer, I used Google. Even back in 2002, I used Google, and I found a lawyer, and a damn good one. I was really happy with him. Daniel Conti.
Okay.
And he's out of Long Island. I know he's regarded pretty well among certain circles, and I certainly hold him in really, really good regard. He took good care of me. Really did.
When you guys got all the discovery on the case, what did he say to you exactly?
I that.
I said, when you finally received all the discovery on the case, what did your lawyer tell you, and what was his advice to you?
Basically, I asked him, you know, what would you do? If you were in my position, would you cooperate? He said, in a heartbeat. He pointed out that, I asked him to show me the numbers on David, show me the numbers on the silver, and he calculated out what he thought their sentences were going to be. And so, you know, it looked to me like it was going to be, you know, 7-8 years, maybe more on me, depending, and of course the whole big long trial, probably.
Right.
Dave was going to get 3 because he had the big number figure tied to him. De Silva was going to get 2. Now, both of them were eligible for a year off because of various ways that you can reduce your sentence in the federal system.
Right.
I knew that they were looking at about a year or two, each of them. And, it really became a no-brainer. It's just roll over, let's do a quick time. And then get the hell out and get on with life. I didn't have the money to put up a formidable defense. The feds had seized all the cash that Silva had. They took his whole bank account. I think it had like $50,000 in it.
Wow. So
that would be depressing.
Yeah. do you still talk to Davidson and Silva at all, or you guys stopped talking?
I haven't spoken to Davis too much, quite honestly, at all. De Silva and I, we've had a few telephone conversations, email exchanges. I have him as a Facebook friend. I know De Silva follows me on Instagram. I'm not really seeing those guys too often. You know, I mean, my wife keeps me on a pretty short leash these days as well. Her ears would definitely be picking up, and she heard I was hanging out with that group.
Right.
I'm sure everyone's toned down some, but it was pretty wild back then.
Yeah. Did the feds ever come to you and ask you to help them in any kind of security work, since you knew so much about the program business?
No, I haven't had, the only thing along those lines, really, has been the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission. And I really, really think it's appropriate to give them props, as in proper dues. In fact, just recently, they've actually been really, really part of the movement to ban Lasix. From what I understand, they've decided that in the state of Kentucky, we're not going to be racing with Lasix anymore, which is basically a drug they give these racehorses.
Right. Shoot them up, trying to make them run faster, right?
Yeah, so they at least were, you know, forward-thinking enough to at least call me in and have the conversation. One thing I mentioned to them was, you know, that if the state of Colorado, no, I couldn't have done what it was I did if the computer system was in the state of Colorado, because their controls there were really tight. You know, part of the problem with gambling is every separate state controls it. That's kind of the problem with the elections, too, by the way.
Wow.
It's a very similar issue. But in the state of Colorado, I never would have had access to that system. They just didn't let programmers on a production system.
Right.
And it makes perfect sense. It's why, you want to separate the people that have control from, you know, from having...
Any way to manipulate the system, right? Did you ever bet on any horses before the whole thing happened, or have you been to a horse track since, Chris?
I live in Lexington, Kentucky. I live in the horse racing capital of the world. It makes my stomach turn every time there's a big racing event. You know, I actually thought Breeders' Cup was last weekend. I didn't realize it's tomorrow.
Right. It's the 10th anniversary.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely been an anniversary. It turns out it's actually the 15th anniversary of my wife's and I's first date.
Wow.
We actually dated around Halloween.
Congratulations.
Halloween time is always marked, you know, our first date, or the Breeders' Cup. Yeah. 10 years, man. I'm glad to say after 10 years, you know, yeah, I did my little bit of time, and yeah, it was rough. And, my wife and I really had the band together, and they make it happen. But
wow. Well, it's a great story, man. I appreciate you coming on, Chris. I mean, this is... This is stuff that no one's ever heard about before. This is how it all went down. And I want to thank you for coming on and sharing it with us, and I'll be in contact with you real soon.
All right. Hey, thanks, Steve.
You got it, my man. I'll talk to you.